Should old acquaintance be forgot? And is that the tune we're going
with? Exactly. Don't stop. Keep going.
And never brought to mind. Should old acquaintance be forgot in days of old lang syne?
For old lang syne. That's not it. No. That's not the
word. For old lang
syne, my dear. For old lang syne. We'll take a cup of kindness yet for the sake of old lang syne.
And of course, naturally, Tony had to go into character. And I'll finish it by saying, we'll take a cup of kindness yet for the sake of old lang syne. Happy New Year, everybody.
2024.
And that's what you do. I don't know what you do at your parties.
Well, I have no idea what Auld Lang Syne is.
Well, Auld Lang Syne comes, well, it's credited with the Scottish poet Robbie Burns. You've right. heard of him. I haven't got a voice track.
It's not
track
something
from
I
him.
Take with my Demizin.
No, it's. Or with your Lemsip. No, it's not. It translates as old long since,
right.
which doesn't make sense either in the modern era, but it really comes down to for old time's sake.
Oh.
So right. that's the end of that, but thank you for participating.
And what's the date, Pete?
The actual date?
Yeah, this will throw him.
Well, the date is only the 9th of December.
That's right.
2023. So aren't we fakers, folks?
Yeah, we certainly are.
This is actually a prank show. It's not a podcast.
Okay, so we've established that we've totally faked the New Year's thing.
Happy New Year!
2024!
Happy New Year in advance. But what will we be doing on New Year's Eve? Pete, what happens at your place?
We'll probably be unconscious.
Oh, really?
In the nicest way.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Yeah, because, you know, we just can't stand waiting around.
I know.
You know, we've done plenty of New Year's Eves where you... put on all the gaiety and the madness, and it's almost like an act.
Yeah. No champagne and pingers?
No, none of that. No, not before bedtime.
Yeah. I often find myself saying to everyone, no, we are not going to watch Can't Stop the Music on Channel 9 in incorrect aspect ratio.
You can't stop the music.
Now, as a representative of the Nine Network, let me just put this straight to you, Pete. Why does Channel 9 insist on playing it in the wrong ratio year after year? I think it's over 20 years now. It's a tradition. They get to midnight, some fireworks go off, and then they throw to Can't Stop the Music. Terrible print, horrible bits where they go to the ads with a graphic that obviously has been made in 1986. They've got to get hold of the new, beautiful master that was made by Shout Factory for their Blu-ray release.
Goodness me, you speak in tongues, Tony.
I think he just turned off.
This is all new to me, your accusations. But I must say, at 84, I can't make it past skating down Broadway.
Listen to the sound of the city. Listen to the sound of my town.
Do you know who the Village People are, Pete?
I certainly do, but I've got
who?
To tell you, we had our own celebration. And Sydney did too, but Melbourne had its own GTV9 celebration for New Year's Eve, of which I was a part of.
Oh, okay.
Managed to stay awake to do the opening announcement. Here's Katrina Rowntree and all that sort of stuff.
Okay, we're going to get to that because I want to hear some quality name drops. But during that conversation there, you might have heard Jovan say, who, in regards to the Village People? And I'd like you now, Pete, to explain to Jovan who the Village People were or are. I'm not sure if they're still going.
Well,
I think they all originally,
in real life, were characters at the YMCA.
It's fun to stay at the YMCA.
Which was reasonably, well, cheap, inexpensive accommodation. Every capital city had one, but in Melbourne particularly, the YMCA was on the site, almost on the site, of the Arts Centre before you cross Prince's Bridge.
Yeah.
So it was well sited. with the Glaciarium, which was a nice skating rink, just across the road. All that's gone now.
And the Village People were six blokes, all in different characters. Do you remember who the characters were, Pete?
I think you can probably see them all on, dare I say, YouTube. You can see a performance.
It's here where you can't see them all on the Channel 9 version because due to the wrong aspect ratio, often two of the Village People are out of frame.
Oh, goodness me. And you can't peek around corners, can you?
When's the last time you actually heard a Village People song?
Oh, well, I actually hear them quite regularly because I'm occasionally in Damien Cowell's band and he does a medley where he combines Village People songs with inappropriate companion numbers. So I've actually found myself on stage doing the YMCA mime and I found that it doesn't matter what context you do it, people have to join in. Once you start doing Y,
it's infectious.
People start forming the letters themselves.
Right. I associate the YMCA with the Grease Megamix. Awkward Weddings is what I associate it with.
Yes.
Because, you know, when we get to that point in the in the wedding when everyone's up dancing.
Yes.
And then you hit the Grease Megamix. And I'm assuming it happens in, well, yes, no, it majoritively just happens in Australia.
Yeah, right.
Everyone just loses it.
Absolutely.
And starts singing along.
The mum and dads sit down at that point, I think.
Yeah.
Now, getting back to your accusation.
You don't want to talk about the Megamix anymore?
I love how Pete is taking my Channel 9 comment personally because you are still a representative of the network.
Exactly. Let me ask you.
I can't this is where we're going to swear.
What you said. The only word I remember was letterbox, but the rest of it was.
Yes.
Would you please put that in writing, and I will put it before the powers that be.
Because I do have a whinge about it on Twitter
of
every
course.
Year. And what confuses people is the opening titles are shown in correct ratio because you know the words will be out of frame if they're not. And then as soon as it finishes, bang, it suddenly goes to full frame.
Well, let me say the nine people will be listening.
Okay.
They won't be mortified because they'll take your aggravated criticism on board.
Yeah.
But I'm thrilled. You are watching the Nine Network. You could be looking at Can't Stop the Music on Blu-ray,
which
is in your library.
No.
Being loyal and remember that I was a booth announcer and started there in 1964, you watch Channel 9.
That's good enough
for me. Thanks for bringing it up.
Get the Channel 9 feeling.
Now, Jovan, what about you, New Year's Eve? What happens?
My family loves celebrating New Year's. They're Latin American and Latin Americans love to party.
Right.
Every year they put something on and as I've gotten older, I can't keep up with the festivities. I just want to go to bed.
And so what would be the guts of it?
Just a lot of food, a lot of dancing, and probably going – I just remember as a child not going to sleep until the next day, until 4 or 5, till we're all exhausted.
And what sort of music are we talking? Because I know for a fact that your dad has very good taste in music.
Oh, now that I'm thinking
Frank
about
Sinatra,
it, I have
I
intense
that.
Memories of playing a lot of Ricky Martin close to the early noughties.
All right.
But we were all very proud of Ricky because he was, you know, one of us.
Yeah, he's a relative of mine, so, you know, we're very proud of him as well.
Yeah, you co-wrote She Bangs?
I don't want to sort of talk myself up too much, but maybe. Pete, are you across the Ricky Martin oeuvre?
Well, you know, it's vibrant and infectious.
I'm pretty sure we had you singing a Ricky Martin song at one of our shows.
Was it She Bangs?
I think it was She Bangs. I think we may have had you doing that.
One of the first concerts I ever went to was for Ricky Martin.
Oh,
I was very young. My parents took me. I remember standing on the seats at the Palais.
Oh, the Palais.
And
standing on the seats.
If Pete's not impressed, because Pete is Palais Pete. He's the owner-operator of Palais Pete. Pardon me.
I think I told you the Palais is a very affectionate place for me. Have I mentioned that before?
Yeah.
I don't know. I grew up there enjoying, as a kid, the Saturday matinees, you know, for children, the Wonder of the World, the serials, the Tom and Jerry cartoons, whatever it was. I grew up in there and, in fact, or dare I say this on a podcast?
There we go.
I had my first sexual experience.
Hang on a second. On our New Year's Eve, Pete's going blue.
I had my first
goodness
sexual experience.
Dear, he's repeated it.
In
the back row.
Oh my God.
Oh my
of the
God.
Stalls.
And you're worried about Jovan standing
and I'm
on the seat.
Sitting on it.
Please, please let me finish. I was alone at the time.
Oh no!
I feel like you could get into legal trouble for this story now.
Very sad.
Are you technically alone if Mervyn Purvis is with you?
No, Mervyn's on the stage.
Okay.
But boys, the tag was I was alone.
Yeah, yeah. There's no way people miss that, Pete.
You don't need to drop any stingers in there. Yeah. But, yeah, it's pretty apparent.
What was the last show you saw at the Palais? You go first, Jovan.
It would have been Erykah Badu. Actually, no, I lie. George Benson would have been
George
the last one.
George Benson?
Cause there's music in the air and lots of loving everywhere. So
give me the night.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great. Okay, George Benson. I saw Sparks there only about a month ago. And I saw UMI doing the full Who's Tommy album. That was quite recent. Pete, last show you saw at the Palais?
Abbott and Costello.
Oh, no! This is not a joke.
Abbott and Costello.
That can't be
my
the last.
My favourite politicians.
I knew the manager and the owners of the Palais, and I was in there all
That's
the
incredible.
Time. And I sat in the empty orchestra pit.
Yes.
I thought you were going to say the back row.
Unseen by the audience at large.
Yeah.
And I looked up and in full view saw my two favourite comedians from the 40s, the golden years of Hollywood, Bud Abbott and Lou Costello.
Now, okay, I said the last show you saw. So obviously this isn't the last show you saw there. This is, I'm guessing, the first, not the first show you saw there?
It was very nearly the
what
first show.
What year are we talking?
Oh, I suppose 1958, 59.
Wow. Abbott and Costello. Now, are you across the Abbott and Costello? Surely, Jovan, you've heard of their famous Who's On First routine.
My grandfather gave me a little statue. That's all I know of Abbott and Costello.
Really?
I have a DVD. I haven't seen it yet.
Well, that's a prize thing. They're in the same, you know, era as Laurel and Hardy and later Martin and Lewis in
that's
that same genre.
Mm. And then Merrick and Rosso, all part of the same lineage. But, Pete, so what were Abbott and Costello doing in Australia? Was it a tour?
No, yeah, they were doing a personal appearance tour and they were on stage just banter, really.
Oh,
they didn't
an evening with.
They didn't, yes, they didn't do Who's On First or anything. And the rumour, the legend has
there
it
we go.
That they lost all their money being paid to them on the tour, gambling, playing cards backstage.
Is that right?
On the Australian tour.
Wow. One of the first shows I saw at the Palais was in the 80s, the blokes from Punter to Punter. Remember them?
Oh, yes.
Slim
they were
Whittle.
Quite big radio stars, weren't they?
Com Marasco. They were sort of like a horse racing themed comedy show. On the
Like I think, Mr. Turf.
Trevor Marmalade was it? Yeah, right. Dr. Turf. He was.
Dr. Turf.
I think
yeah.
he was one of them. But
we need to bring back horse racing themed comedy.
We so do. Let's do it today. But so what happened was they would have a New Year's Eve blowout at the Palais, which seats about 3,000 people, does it not? Be?
Yeah, just under three, yeah.
And so they would have this comedy show that would go for 7 or 8 hours all the way up to New Year's Eve and beyond. And there was a famous Australian comedy duo. Have you heard of Los Trios Ringbarkis?
Oh, yes, yes.
They were the winners of the top Edinburgh Comedy Festival Award, the used to be called the Perrier. I think they were the first Australian winners way back. You would know Lena Woodley.
Yeah.
One of them directed Lena Woodley's stage shows. They'd been off in Hollywood somewhere. And they hadn't been seen in Australia for 2 or 3 years. And the word was, they're going to be appearing tonight on stage at the Palais. And it's their big comeback. So everyone's gone to the Palais to see Los Trios Ringbarkis. It gets to midnight. There's a huge fanfare. Here they come. What happens is out of the wings comes a little remote control dune buggy with tiny models of Los Trios Ringbarkis in it. Drives up to the front of the stage and stops.
How clever.
And then you hear their voices.
Ladies and gentlemen, here we go.
Obviously, they're on mics in the wings. And then the car drives around the stage, drives into the wings, crashes, and you hear sound effects of crashes. Debris, explosive material comes flying out of the wings. And Los Trios, who obviously had trampolines in the wings, spring out of the wings and roll across the stage in spectacular stunt style. 3,000 people went nuts.
That's how Ricky Martin entered the stage.
That was a terrific description, but how clever.
I have to say, a lot of people were distracted by something that was going on in the back row. I don't know what it was.
Javin, on a previous episode, you wore to our little get-together from the hideout, you wore a Jeff Goldblum T-shirt.
Yeah.
Which is a, I thought, was a pretty much a collector's item because you met him, as you detailed.
Yeah.
Have you ever met any other big-time movie stars?
Yeah, here we go. We've had Abbott and Costello. See if you can top that for a name drop.
Not movie stars. Do influencers count?
Of course, I suppose.
Who are we talking?
And this story isn't even mine, so do stories that aren't mine count?
We'll decide that after we hear it.
Sorry to put
is.
You on the spot.
For a moment, I thought you were wondering who I was wearing today, which I haven't met Tommy Wiseau from the room.
You're not across the room, are you, Pete?
I can't even spell Tommy Wiseau.
Who is Tommy Wiseau
for those of us who are over 80?
This will be good. How do you explain Tommy Wiseau?
He's an auteur. That's all I'll say.
He writes, directs, produces, and stars in his own films, which may be of questionable quality.
Mm.
Right. Okay. So they could be a little licentious, could they?
Oh, not so much licentious.
You'll have to look that up in your Funkin' Wagnalls.
Not again. They're more sort of known for their, it sounds cruel to say incompetence. But they're perhaps somewhat below par in the technical department.
Well, he's famous for The Room, which he intended as a drama, but the world has adopted it as a comedy. It's not very well made. It's made with good intention, but it's incredibly funny. If you go in watching it at the right angle.
Yeah.
Tony and I have been to a screening.
We love it. It's shown often, you know, midnight movie style, you know, like the Rocky Horror Show.
Right, okay.
People come along and shout out their favourite lines at the screen.
It's a cult classic. I guess one of my name drops could be Greg Sestero. I met him.
He was the co-star of The Room.
He's actually one of these guys holding the...
on the T-shirt you're
wearing.
Yeah,
holding the
football. Yes, I wish you could see Jovan with his T-shirt. He's pulling it about all over the place and the faces...
I met that guy.
...actually move. They move involuntarily on the T-shirt. It's quite spooky.
He was at a screening at Cinema Nova for The Room. He occasionally comes down.
Wonderful venue for that sort of thing. You know, things are, you know, from out of left field, if you don't mind me saying it that way. Cult classics, all that sort of thing. Anytime you want to go to the Nova.
Here we go.
Come in with me. I can get in for nothing.
There you go. Now, there's your influencer.
You come with me now. Shouldn't tell everybody.
We don't all want to sit in the back row, Pete.
I tell you what, they're not very observant. We'll walk in backwards.
Oh.
They'll think we're coming out.
Okay. I'm sure they'll think it's a scene from Tenet. Being
so that's one of my name drops. But the other influencer I was going to say was Kim Kardashian.
Oh,
gee, my wife Christina. We only wanted one, and you've come up with a trio, Kim Kardashian.
Yeah. I feel like I'm still not going to top what you're about to say.
Prior to her last marriage, or
I think she was married to Kanye at that point.
And what were you going to say about Christina? She
was gathered at the front of this store. She joined this mass of people just looking inside a store, and we had no idea who it was.
Excuse me, Christina is Jovan's better half.
That's right. Absolutely.
Better half. Chris hates that. Maybe she likes better half, but she doesn't like it when I'm referenced as the better half.
Oh, okay.
She's his beautiful wife.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So go on with the story.
So there's this crowd in front of this shop, one of the stores that they own, and we were wondering who the hell was there. Chris basically got trampled by one of the security guards. They pushed her out of the way so that Kim Kardashian could make it to her car.
Goodness.
And that was it. We have a photo where she's just a meter from her.
I'd love to see that photo.
Yeah.
You've introduced a trio. You really have. I love a bit of name dropping. What about you, Tony? With your widespread experience, did you know any New Zealand stars before you came to Australia?
New Zealand stars. That's interesting.
What about John?
John Clark. I didn't know him in New Zealand. John Clark, the late John Clark.
Yeah, I emailed him once and he replied.
That's the kind of guy he was.
A lovely bloke and no longer with us, sadly.
He was the most famous man in New Zealand when I was a kid.
Fred Dagg's character, wasn't it?
Fred Dagg, his first album was called Fred Dagg's Greatest Hits, which I think remained the highest selling New Zealand album up until Thriller came out, which wasn't a New Zealand album, I mean sold in New Zealand.
It was a cover band.
But then John Clark became so famous that he could not leave his house and he moved to Australia and then started all over again from scratch.
Yes, well, he did successfully continue his career, more than continue. He just went to the top and he wrote as an author. As a writer, there's no comparison. He wrote the Games series.
He starred in that, and I had a cameo in the final episode of The Games. But the best thing I did with John Clark is I got to do a scene with him in the film Crackerjack, because I'm the lawn bowls commentator. And he was, I think, the only time in his career he played the bad guy. He was the villain.
Terrific.
In Crackerjack. Yeah, but I don't think I met him when I was in New Zealand. I'm trying to think if I met – okay, this is really sad. When I was at school, I would have been 12 years old. We were up the Coromandel Peninsula on a school trip, and they were filming the car chase climax to what became New Zealand's first feature film in like 50 years. It was called Sleeping Dogs. It starred Sam Neill. And I think in his first film or his first feature film, and it was directed by Roger Donaldson. And the star, they brought in an American star. It was Warren Oates, who we only knew from a film that no one had been able to see because we were school kids, but we all knew the name of the film, which was called Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia.
I remember the title.
It was a Sam Peckinpah film. So on our school trip, we all raced down to this where they were filming the car chase in hope that we would see the star of Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia. And he wasn't there. I don't think he was in the scene.
Let's take it a step higher to Hollywood stars. Bring us into the modern era.
Well, in terms of Martin Malloy, we met, like, everyone who was huge at the time.
Yeah, that's cheating.
So Samuel L. Jackson, Robin Williams, Kevin Costner.
But who sticks in your mind particularly as a character in person?
I tell you who was great was Samuel L. Jackson, because he was the guy who came in with no entourage, no one from the film company.
Really?
Just came in a cab and had no one telling him not to say things.
A top Hollywood star.
Amazing. Yeah. I think he came in like 3 years in a row and was always off the leash, just totally uncensored, saying what he thought of everything in a way that if there had been podcasts, he would probably be in a lot of trouble. I remember him talking about how he'd lost the Oscar for Pulp Fiction, and it was sort of unfair because he and John Travolta were like co-stars, and Travolta had been nominated for Best Actor, but Samuel L. Jackson had only been nominated for supporting actor.
Oh.
And he says, I'm presenting an Oscar this year. And he announced he was going to wear a buttless tuxedo so that when he walked away from the podium, he goes, I'll be letting the Academy know exactly what I think.
Yeah.
And he was just full of stuff like that. So he was great because you were just getting it unfiltered.
So we've had Greg Sestero, Kim Kardashian.
Yep.
John Clark.
Yeah.
Samuel L. Jackson.
And Abbott and Costello.
Yeah.
That's a pretty impressive list. But Pete, can you take us any higher, do you reckon?
Well, for people you've met.
Yeah.
I don't think in Australian show business, in pop music, there was anybody ever bigger than Johnny O'Keefe. But I can remember the last time he came down on the Don Lane show. They normally came down in the afternoon, did a rehearsal.
Yes.
Then there was a meal break, a tea break. Then, of course, they let the audience in. So over those intervening hours, say 6 to 8, the artists are just sitting around in their own dressing room or green room.
In those 6 to 8 hours, Don Lane stormed out 5 times. That's what I heard.
Oh, now we're going revisiting that, are we? A lovely guy, and we spent the tea break together over at the Milk Bar in Bendigo Street, Richmond, opposite the Fun Factory.
I know where that was.
And we had a cup of coffee and, I don't know, a Savoy together or something.
That's
before he went back on, and that was his last national television appearance, as it turned out. Yeah.
Wow.
But a lovely guy, because Johnny very often would support some of the visiting stars who came out appearing at the, for instance, the Sydney Stadium.
Yes.
That's where the big stars went.
True.
The Festival Hall in Melbourne, that was the biggest venue there was.
Yeah.
They hadn't invented Rod Laver Arena or any of those huge stadiums. And so, Johnny would come out as a support act and they would not let him go. And the visiting artists from overseas would be infuriated sitting in the dressing room waiting to come out as the star billing.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't let Johnny O'Keefe go. So they didn't like him supporting them. But that's how popular Johnny O'Keefe was in his heyday. But then, you know, yeah, I happened to, as a disc jockey, like yourself doing Martin Malloy,
yes,
being on the radio show, of course, people wanted to be promoted. So yep, they'd come into the radio show. And Sarah Vaughan, who was a very big star.
Yep.
Ella Fitzgerald.
Oh, these, those sort of we people. Can't top that's these names.
But the one that really sticks in my mind, and I can hear a voice track coming up for this, because as a kid,
yeah,
I grew up
yes,
sneaking down when my parents didn't notice. I must have got out the bedroom window, down to St Kilda, down to the Memorial Hall Cinema.
Not the Palais.
Not the Palais. No, no, they wouldn't run these sort of pictures.
Oh, hang on.
The old Universal fright features like Dracula and Frankenstein.
Right.
And Frankenstein meets the Wolfman and the House of Dracula and you name it. Anyway, I would go down and see these films, then have to walk back up Fitzroy Street St Kilda in the dark back home. Can you imagine the thrill of in later life... I'm a disc jockey, fast forward 20 years, and Boris Karloff,
wow,
the Titan of Terror.
The man who played Frankenstein's monster.
The master monster does me a voice track for my radio show.
Stay keen on the teen scene for Pete's sake. This is Boris Karloff on 3AK. Peter Smith has a monster of a show lined up for you today.
That is amazing. That wasn't faked up. That's not you doing a very good Karloff, is it?
And I've got to thank my mate Philip Brady, who went and had afternoon tea with Mr. and Mrs. Karloff.
Really?
In their apartment in Belgravia in London.
Yeah. Now, Pete, if you notice, I'm looking at you like the way you looked at me when I said Greg Sestero. Who is Bob Karloff?
Bob Karloff?
Oh, I mean, you just said, but...
You've surely seen a photo of Frankenstein's monster.
Yes.
The original one. That's him.
With the bolts in the neck. That was Boris Karloff.
Boris Karloff. And he did a film very late in his career called Targets for Peter Bogdanovich.
Yes,
which
and
is
he did
extremely
a thriller television series too. And this...
Did he have the bolts in the neck for that one too?
He just always had the bolts.
He was in, City Street in that stage hosting this very successful television series in the 60s called Thriller.
Yeah.
And I warn you, my friends, this is a real thriller. So that voice track goes right back to those days.
And what about, you must have heard a song called The Monster Mash.
It was a monster mash.
Both of them are looking at me so intensely right now.
Joba's going, are they just making these up?
It was a very big hit back in the 60s. You weren't even born then.
And well, that was not Boris Karloff.
You know something? You
that
were just a shining light in those people celebrating New Year's Eve. And then when they finally got to bed down, little Jovan Caro was created.
Wow. My dad was born in 1964.
The same year
Your
as
father?
Me.
Yes.
So was I. And that's also that's the year Pete started work at Channel 9.
Oh, God.
Just letting you know.
Oh, bring the casket in. I'm ready.
Sorry for interrupting the show, everyone. I just wanted to head over to the Hideout Society for a moment.
Oh, I love this place. There's a cocktail bar. Bouncy Castle, and our favourite...
The Royal Blue Appreciation Wall.
As you know, without the support of our Patreon or Hideout Society members, there would be no From the Hideout. And this member deserves a special plaque on this very wall.
Magnificent! Thank you, Hayden McMiniman.
Fantastic. On you, Hayden.
Forever etched in our hearts and appreciation wall. Now back to the show.
We began by saying that New Year's Eve had come and gone.
We did.
Happy New Year.
2024.
But I just want to put you guys on the spot, if I may.
Oh, what now?
And ask you, did you make a New Year's resolution, Jovan?
To try and complete all the hundreds of ideas I have in my head and make them happen.
That's very sick.
Well, that's an admirable resolution. You're a busy boy. I feel like your own production company. You're not just standing up at comedy festivals amusing people.
Yeah, those lazy bastards.
No, okay, that's a proper resolution. Mine would be to eat fewer chicken parmigianas because I am one of those people who go somewhere, go to the pub, look at all those fantastic. I'll just have the parma. And I'm sure I'm at an age where I've got to cut down on the parma intake.
Well, I can't see why. I mean, you seem to have you have a body of an 18-year-old.
Well, yes.
I think you should give it back.
Okay. There we go. So it's in the boot of your car. Yeah.
My resolution, hearkening back to being put on the spot by the boy comedian here,
yes.
I confessed that I'd never seen The Matrix.
Oh.
So what did I get for a Christmas present? If you recall,
the DVD of The Matrix.
I got the DVD of The Matrix, the widescreen version, and I went home and I put it on and I really was glad I strapped myself in.
Yeah, right.
Because it was I found a very grueling film. I mean, technically terrific and probably the first time that CGI was used to, you know, marvellous effect. I was aware the film was filmed in Sydney, but my point is you put me on the spot. Because I knew nothing about it. You guys, being film buffs, knew all about The Matrix, as I'm sure most of our podcast listeners would too. But I want to put you on the spot now. Yeah. You did it to me.
Are you going
to
ask us to explain the plot of The Matrix?
I'm going to ask you about the opening scene. What is the actual first opening scene in The Matrix?
If you can't understand the opening scene, I have no idea how you committed to the rest of the film.
The opening scene is Carrie Ann Moss in a very darkened apartment block and she receives a phone call. Am I?
Yeah, no. Is this what happened?
I said the first visuals was a computer jargon on the screen after the title.
Right.
Then a guy with a gun and a police raid.
Yeah.
If that you'll recall that. The first sequence involving a motor vehicle in the film. Do you remember that?
Oh. Yeah, a motor vehicle.
It was a truck smashing into a phone
booth.
That's
right, and she disappears into the phone?
Yes.
All right, and now Keanu's character's name in the film, please.
Neo.
That's okay. Neo is correct. Mr. Anderson.
That's
you had me doing that in the laneway.
Because you are Agent Smith.
And everybody understood what it was about except Pete Smith, who had never seen The Matrix. Thank you.
Yeah.
Now, The Matrix... What does that stand for, the title?
Are you asking me what is The Matrix?
Yeah, yes.
That's a big one.
That's literally a question a character asks in the film and they spend about 50 minutes answering
it. Well, I'm going to spend 3 seconds telling you it's a computer-generated dream world.
Well, there you go. See, if Pete Smith had been in the film, they could have saved a couple of reels.
So let me just tell
you. Pete's now doing Morpheus. That's literally what he
said. Sitting through that film... which I had to sit through. It upset me because it's got a lot of dark bits in it, I've got to tell you.
Oh, dark bits.
Lawrence Fishburne and Hugo Weaving have a lot to answer for. Thank you very much.
Well,
here endeth the lesson.
That is fantastic.
I don't know. I don't understand the lesson.
I thought Pete was going to fake his way through it. I thought he was just going to pretend he'd seen The Matrix, but you've clearly watched the whole thing.
Yes, and I wouldn't be cruel enough to ask Gervain Caro.
Yeah.
To tell me all about Monster Mash.
Are you going to say to return it to the op shop?
Yeah, I would not be cruel enough to ask you to watch The Matrix Reloaded. You know there's a bit in The Matrix where someone is hanging from a helicopter and it's flying over the city and if you freeze it, you can see Commonwealth Bank. It's true. It's shot in Sydney.
Oh, that's good. A touch of Sydney.
You go, wow, the commo. The commo's in The Matrix.
This has been our very first From the Hideout for 2024, and thanks for listening.
Tony Martin, I'm here.
You're listening.
Yeah, I'm listening.
Gervain Caro.
Pete Smith speaking.
And never brought to mind.
Yes.
Should.
Start again. Start again.
Is that the. I mean, I've got 4 lines here.
Yes.
Which one?
You're doing them in the proper melody.
Yeah,
off you go.
Hello, everyone.
That's Tony Martin. He'll be here in a minute.
Enjoy the show.
Thanks. Ooh, an exclusive area.
Hold on a second, buddy. Have you got access?
Oh,
Are you a member of the Hideout Society?
Sorry, what?
It's a Patreon page designed to help the making of the show and give you access to exclusive content.
The show? What do you mean, the show?
From the Hideout, the monthly podcast you're enjoying right now.
Behind you.
Okay.
Thanks, pal. Good to see you.
How come you let him in?
Members only. He's a member.
Ah.
Royal Blue.
What?
Oh, it's different subscription tiers.
There's Beige, Beaujolais, and Royal Blue.
Each grants you different levels of access to all kinds of extra goodies.
Gotcha. Look, I'll have to have a think.
You've got it. Golly, it's so fun and exclusive in here.
So how do I sign up?
Just visit patreon.com/from the hideout.
Okay. Done.
Welcome
to the Hideout Society.
Why, thank you.
Beaujolais?
Royal Blue.
Royal Blue! Though Beaujolais is still fun to say. Now, let me teach you the secret handshake. Oh, wait, I'll show you the horse first.